Greetings, dear, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Working Experience, a very warm, open-arm audio embrace and a squeeze. This episode is brought to you by my company, One Circle Media. One Circle Media is a hybrid digital agency and media content creator. We create and design apps, websites, videos, social media content, and physical products. We are artists, directors, designers, producers, coders, editors, thinkers, makers, and creators who embrace story and creativity from design, web and app development, animation, docs, features, TV shows, digital and social media content to physical products. For our clients, we create content that builds networks and audiences across multiple platforms. Check out our work at onecircledigital.com and onecirclebrand.com. If you work for a network, studio, brand, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I'd love to hear from you. This episode is also brought to you by an app that I created called Still Believe. Still Believe transforms a picture in your home into video proof of your child's favorite magical characters. With the app, parents can catch the magic of the Tooth Fairy, leaving money under their children's pillow, or Santa delivering presents on Christmas Eve in their home. You download the app, take a picture, and we create the magic. We utilize feature film visual effects artists to transform your picture into video. Just tell your kids that you have a special app that can detect and capture the Tooth Fairy, then present them with the video proof in the morning. The look on their faces is priceless. Your Still Believe video is created in minutes, and you can then save it to your phone and share it on social media. The app is available for the iPhone and Android, and it's free to download. Our aim is to bring joy and wonder into the hearts of children around the world. Check it out at stillbelieve.co. Thanks, everyone, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Working Experience.
The Working Experience.
Route 93 North is almost at a standstill. It's a rough one out there this morning. Snow and sleet.
There is no service on
the... Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah, folks. We're going to be a few minutes. We have train traffic ahead of us. We should be moving shortly.
John, we need that report ASAP.
Where are we on that presentation?
Dan, HR wants to see you.
Did you return that email yet?
We have a team meeting at 10.
To stay late, Bob.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
They're moving in a different direction.
And after the meeting, we'll have a breakout session.
Who ate my
Where are my hot pockets?
This microwave is disgusting.
Oh, God, what's that
He was rubbing his
Sexual
toenails at his desk.
I
can't take it anymore.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Working Experience Podcast. It's Maddie Kay.
And it's John. I hope you're having a wonderful work week. Matt and I are going to delve head deep into a wonderful topic. Matt, why don't you kick it off for everyone?
Well, actress Felicity Huffman was sentenced to 14 days in her... college admissions scandal.
14 days. That's what I term as some hard time there, Matt.
How many rocks is she going to be breaking?
She's going to be out on the chain gang?
In 14 days. Yeah, they should put her on it. You know what they should have done? Okay, so just to recap.
Well, is that 14 days in what type of... Is it in a country club prison?
I'm sure.
I think 14 days in a regular prison would break her.
They're not sending her any place where anything's going to happen. I mean, like, people with financial crimes tend to go to, you know, yeah, kind of country clubs.
It's a country club.
So just to recap a little bit, actress Felicity Huffman was one of the people, along with, what was that other woman's name? The Full House lady?
Yeah, Lori, I know who you're talking about. Something. I don't know her name.
She's married to some fashion designer. Anyway, they, along with a bunch of people... wealthy people, bribed college officials, SAT people, SAT officials, so forth, to get their kids into, what was it, Yale? I think UCLA was in on this.
It's the old American way, cheating the system.
Yeah. Didn't the soccer coach at Yale, is that right, lose his job? He was involved
yes,
in
I
this?
Believe it was the woman's soccer coach at right. Yale.
They were photoshopping pictures of kids into, like, crew photos. I mean, this is the most, like, pathetic, really pathetic, you know? So they were bribing. These are rich people bribing, you know, people to get their kids into these schools. So it's basically like, you know, entitlement upon entitlement. Like, they already have all this money. Why do you have to take away a spot from a needy kid? You know, I teach high school, as most people know, and, you know, where I teach is probably middle class-ish, but there are kids there who definitely need financial assistance. And when we talked about it, they were quite offended by this. I mean, you know, and I made the point, who are you going to hire for a job? Somebody who had to, like, kind of fight their way through community college, or somebody whose mom and dad paid, you know, $100,000 for them to get in to a... I mean, some of these schools, I'm like, seriously, you had to bribe people for your kid to get in there? Your kid must be pretty stupid. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, a rich, entitled kid would just not be first on the hiring list for me personally. Well, I mean, look.
One of these parents, or the two parents, paid some absurd amount of money. I'm talking like over $500,000 for their kid to get into UCLA. Or something like that. Like, what are you, nuts? I mean, take the friggin' admissions test or the SAT. Like, what are you, crazy?
Well, I mean, I think we've discussed this on the podcast. Like, they could have hired, like, a bunch of, you know, academic tutors. You could have personal trainers, yeah. You know, to get to a point. But there must have been a conversation between the spouses of such, and then they would be like, you know what, even if we spend all that money on all the trainers and tutors, our kid is too stupid, we have to go with plan B. I mean, what a terrible message to send to your child.
Yeah, you're too dumb, so we have to pay for you to get into college. I mean, it's like, I think some of these colleges, if you're able to just pay the full tuition, they'll let your kid in, you know?
But like, even still, I mean, this stuff is like, this stuff, in my opinion, has always existed. And we all know about, you know, legacy kids, or, you know, mommy and daddy are rich. They make a big donation to the school, and all of a sudden Junior gets in, which is completely unfair, but is... pretty much has been regular practice for decades.
Oh, I would say centuries. I mean, like, well, as someone pointed out, this used to be done like you would donate money for a library, and at least everybody at the school could kind of benefit from that, or a new dorm, you know.
Yeah, and one idiot gets in,
right?
So you get the new library, and then, you know, right. Jack Dort, I shouldn't say, Tim Smith's son, who's a complete idiot, gets into the school. And everyone takes it on the chin, but you get a nice library.
I knew a guy at Fordham who I would say was a complete idiot. And you know who he is. I'm not going to name him. and his parents basically paid for him to get into Fordham. He was very wealthy.
And, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Total idiot. And
a complete idiot.
Yeah. And his parents were very wealthy, and you know, obviously, I think he had come later, like he had been at some other school, and he's an idiot, you know, just a total. I'm sure he's still an idiot. I'm, you know, sure that's nothing. None of that's changed. He has idiot kids, you know, and all that. So Miss Huffman, the other woman, I don't remember whose daughter is some sort of obnoxious Instagram influencer. One of these is. I think it's the Full House woman. Wait, I gotta look up this woman's name, because I can't. I keep calling her the Full House woman.
Well, I mean, but the real question is the outrage over the sentencing, right? That she got 14 days, which is less than kind of like a slap on the wrist.
I think she... Oh, no, I guess it is. Oh, no, Lori Loughlin was the other woman.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Okay, so Lori Loughlin pled guilty and all that stuff. Felicity Huffman apparently chose to fight the charges, and now she is going to Jill, you know what they had to do with Felicity Huffman? They had to put her in a red jumpsuit and have her go to downtown LA and pick up garbage for 14 days.
No, you know what? This is what I'm going to say. Like, the point of them going to jail is just, it's silly. Like, what the judge should have done is be like, okay, Felicity Huffman. Is it Felicity Huffman? Is that it?
Yeah.
So Felicity Huffman. Okay. For the next 5 years, you are working in inner city LA schools as, you know, whatever she has to do. Maybe, you know, 1 week she's a janitor. Maybe the next week she's helping students out, you know, tutoring, whatever. Put her, like, to volunteer work. Not, like, just going to jail for 14 days is such a waste.
Okay, well,
she's not going to learn anything.
It does say here, after her,
she's going to get some community service, right?
250 hours of community service.
I mean, that's not, in my opinion, that's not enough. It's got to be five years.
Pay a $30,000 fine. Like, who does that fine go to? Does that go to the city of Boston?
It's just crap.
She ought to be forced to pay $100,000 to a, you know, an after-school program or something like that in the inner city.
Yeah, but even that, like jail time and a fine, she's not gonna learn her lesson. There's this sense of entitlement. Like, I think she still thinks that she did the right thing for her child.
Well, she does say in a public statement, "I can promise you that in the months and years to come, I will try and live a more honest life." So there you go. Lesson learned, John. I guess you're embarrassed now, because she did learn her lesson. She will try and live a more honest...
She'll try and live an honest life.
She probably won't, but she'll try. Anyway, you know. I mean, like, somebody has to tell you this is wrong. You have to learn that. You have to try to live a more honest life. It says, before the sentence was handed down, prosecutors dismissed Huffman's previous expressions of parental anxiety and concern, saying, "Welcome to parenthood." That's a pretty pithy statement. Welcome to parenthood.
And the other thing, too, is that, like, what they don't realize is they're all of these affluent parents are already ahead of the game just by the mere fact that they can, A, send their kid to these schools and pay the tuitions, B, you know, take all the prep courses and, you know, they're like... Kids that are in sports and like club and travel teams, it's expensive. Like, just to get your kid in that pool of talent to get admitted to these schools takes a lot of money.
Don't you think that their kids already went to the best private schools?
I would say yes.
And they it's already unfair. Like, it's already unfair, even on a legitimate level.
That's my point. And right. I'm even speaking from experience. My son is going to a private high school, one of the top high schools in New York and in the country. And right. It's, you know, the tuition is five figures. Yep. I mean, he definitely has and we live in one of the top school systems in the nation, the public school system.
Right.
And he's got a leg up on those kids.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, so there are levels to this. But if someone looked at that, I don't think they would say, "Hey, John, you know, you're committing a crime by sending your kid here." I mean, obviously, there are he definitely have advantages, and I'm calling it out. But I'm not... You know, I don't think... my whole life is committing a crime. I mean, right. Jesus. Pills, fraud, my lies, cheating. So I don't even know what leg to stand on at this point.
Yeah, and everybody wants to, you know, like, standing on ceremony about things. I suppose some parents would. I mean, but... You know, we were kind of talking about this in school. Like, I'm not Mr. Technology. I get kind of tired of it. But, like, me saying, like, no, you're not going to use technology, and it doesn't serve the students. Like, the reality is what it is. So, I mean, it's like, you know, I suppose some parents would say, nope, we're going to move to Brooklyn and you're going to go to the public schools. Well, my brother was talking about this. You know, he lives in D.C. and my nephew's right. three right now. But, you know, he said the public school near them, 1% of the kids managed to pass the state test in math.
Oh, my God.
1%. And he's like...
See, and then the... So, right, what you were saying, like, the progressive view is, okay, you know, I'm going to send my kid to that public school. But...
What purpose
that would
is
be
that
a colossal mistake.
Yeah,
colossal
I mean, honestly,
mistake.
Like, what wider purpose does that serve, except, again, to kind of stand on ceremony? You know, there's a lot of... I mean, there's always been poor people. There's always going to be wealthy people. There's always going to be mega... wealthy people who, I mean, you have some people like Sting apparently is leaving no money to his kids because, you know, he's like, no, they just got to do for themselves. Some people take that route, which I don't know, I find kind of nasty, but, and then there are some people who, you know, they just want to make sure their kids are, I think most parents want to give their kids the best that they possibly can, but
I think with, like, sorry to cut you off, but like with Sting and Warren Buffett and the Gates, I think you have to, if you leave your kids too much, then things could go sideways. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's nothing worse. You basically, in my opinion, you set them up for failure in life.
Right.
So there's a right amount to, I personally think, maybe in a trust that's given over years or that's set up in a system where, you know, there are lessons learned or charities supported or how, whatever. I don't think that number is zero, but I don't think that number is 20 billion. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
And that's for each family. And I honestly also don't think that, you know, they're, you know, is I've known trust fund kids. They're all. It's not like one is okay and the rest. They're all messed up.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have to do anything and you have no purpose in life, that's. I mean, you can find a purpose. Maybe you could give all of that money away. But there's also the idea of, and this is what these parents like. You're not in. In their twisted reality, they think they're helping their kids. And it's like, you are telling your kids you can't do this on your own. You don't have the skills or the talent or the tools, so we have to pay for it. And at some point, your child is going to be 30 or 40 years old, and then what are they supposed to make out of themselves? I mean, what are they supposed to think? That's always in the background.
It's a terrible message. All right, we should transition to the legacy college article.
One thing I was going to say, they were talking about Felicity Huffman. Apparently, the lawyers were arguing for house arrest and so forth, and the prosecutors said, "Hey, look, her being in house arrest, she lives in a mansion, and with her infinity pool." That's not exactly a punishment. So I didn't know what I did not know what an infinity pool was. So I looked it up, and I see it's one of those things that it appears to not really have an edge to it, you know, or a ledge or whatever. So just so our readers understand, I said to John, I didn't know what an infinity pool was, and John pretty much laughed at me, which just shows the disparity of our social circles,
right?
Because
exactly.
Pretty much all of John's friends have infinity pools and pity
yep.
people like me who don't
we
have
We actually them. Laugh at people like you.
Yeah, and the ignorance and all. So that's what I've been,
let them eat cake phrases are passed around.
That's what I've been dealing with my entire life. So if people think Maddie K hasn't struggled, I mean, let me tell you. My first car, right, was used. My parents got me a used car. You think I haven't struggled?
Oh, my first car was a Chevy Vega.
Ooh.
With the driver's side I don't know what you call it, where you put your feet, like the bottom of the car.
Yeah.
There was a hole in it where when it rained, my feet would get wet because the tires would kick up water. And it said on the speedometer that it could go 80, but it would, after it got past 50 miles an hour, things started to shake uncontrollably.
Hey, I really liked that Ford Tempo I had. That thing was pretty good. But same thing, though. If it got above 60 miles an hour, it didn't react very well to that. All right.
Well, just for me personally, with my family and my legacy, I'm willing the boys my half of the working experience company.
Yeah. They'll never have to work a day in their lives.
They'll never have to work a day in their life. They can cash in on this for the rest of their lives.
I mean, they could take a loan out on this podcast. This is collateral right here. Right,
I'm talking 7-8 figure line.
Sure, absolutely. So to segue into this, now college legacy admissions are not outright bribes, but they basically function the same way. And I think I've said this on the podcast before, but many white people really have a problem with affirmative action for minorities, whereas white people have had de facto affirmative action since this country was founded. I mean, how many people...
Yeah, baby, and let's continue it.
Right. It's the only way
I don't want to get off this gravy train.
I have no talent of my own.
Yeah, come on.
All I've got, you know, is being white, which is pretty sad. But look at all the firemen, the cops... people work for Con Edison. How many of them get jobs because of their brothers, their fathers? Because they're all white.
I mean, all of them. Not all of them, but it's a staggering amount.
I would say 90. I mean, it's different now. But if you go back to the 1950s, 60s, 70s, even through the 80s, look at all the people working on Wall Street. I mean, look at.
It's not only like nepotism, but it's also like social circles.
Oh yeah,
you go to Harvard and you then tap into an alumni network that just because you went to Harvard, Jim Bob is a hedge fund manager. He went to Harvard. He loves Harvard. You just came out of Harvard. All of a sudden, you're a financial analyst for a hedge fund.
Yeah. Not because you have any particular skills that anybody else couldn't acquire, but or intelligence or anything like that.
No, or like if you played lacrosse or if you played football, you played soccer, you can tap into those social networks.
It's just so ingrained, and you hear white people say this all the time. They're taking our jobs. It's like, what do you mean your job? But that's how they see it. Like, it's so ingrained that, like, well, this job being a cop or a fireman or an accountant or that firm or that college, like, well, no, that's mine because my grandfather went there. Like, yeah.
And it's the same thing with, like, unions.
Unions, like, yep, yep.
Unions, it's horrific. And Matt and I have both worked in the film and TV industry, so we've worked with unions. And these are, like... These are like lifers, and it's like admission to this group. And then once you get in it, and it's all about who you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Not because of any... There was a family in the 52 union in New York, the Electrics. Well, Grips Electrics, I think art department's in that. They had these people who were notoriously incompetent. Drunk at lunch... I mean, dangerous sometimes. And they were called must hires. And nobody wanted them on their crews. They were just awful. But because their last
name... I've been on productions with must hires where you would hire them and that you just wanted them to sit there and do nothing. But you had to hire them.
They would put these people on the truck. They did not want them on set. They were like, do not let that person on set because they're tanked. Or they're just incompetent.
And they would just then sleep in the truck.
Yeah.
And collect their day rate.
But then the same ilk of people turn around like, oh, well, this person just got that job because they're African American and they're not as qualified. Look around you here. Like, go to Con
Edison. You're being paid for a job and you're not even allowed to step foot on the set.
No. How many
Because you're that incompetent.
how many people have gotten jobs as, like, custodians in the courthouse or whatever because of just they're the brother-in-law or sister-in-law of some politician, and they just – and they think they're entitled to that.
Whereas listen, you know me. I'm always looking to play that card.
Well, you know –
Johnny wedges himself in there.
Some local politician came under the gun. I think it was a couple of years ago. He was running – I forget who it was. His name's on the tip of my tongue. But it was, he was giving jobs to his friends and family. And he goes, well, who am I going to give jobs to, my enemies? Like, what are you talking about?
Well, of course I am. Look at Trump.
Yeah.
Look at Trump.
I know.
He's filling up the cabinet, all the presidential jobs with family, friends.
Yeah.
Children. You name it.
Ivanka Trump is negotiating with the Chinese, like,
of course she's definitely qualified to do that.
Absolutely.
Jared Kushner, I was actually on I was on set with a DP, so a camera guy who was on a production where they were interviewing Jared Kushner. Am I pronouncing his name right? Jared Kushner.
Yeah, I guess.
And he said that this guy is so socially awkward. It's you can't even like interact with him. He's worse than they're portrayed in the press.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
just a little tidbit.
People who come from that ilk, they're just to me like not normal people. Like, what could I possibly talk to Ivanka Trump? Who's the daughter?
Is it Ivanka?
Yeah. What could I possibly speak with that woman about?
How about fashion, Matt? How about
right.
$20,000 handbags?
Yeah.
And I know you are a lover of the Gucci, the Chanel.
I mean,
you could talk about that.
Her norm is so outside of my norm, which is probably like 90% of America. Like, what could I? What do you talk to these people about? Like, what does she do? Like, that you would say, like, oh, how's this going? Or how's, like, there's no frame of reference to talk to these people.
Oh, I could talk with them because I speak their language. Infinity pools, handbags.
Right, right, exactly. But, yeah, it just kills me when people always play that card, white people play that card of, like, firemen or cops will say, like, oh, well, you know, he took the test and he didn't get as high scores that, you know, the other white guys, but he got the job. Like, man, you could throw a rock in most places and hit a bunch of white guys who got a job they are not qualified for because of
absolutely.
Who they know. But that seems normal. Like, that's just normal. Like, oh, well, my dad's the president of the union or my uncle's the foreman, or so of course I'm getting up. Like, they don't see, there's nothing wrong with that. But as soon as it extends outside of their little tribe, oh no, well, that's, it's an injustice. Like, seriously, how much does affirmative action honestly affect the average American? I would probably say not much at all. At all, I would say, really. You know? I mean, it's just, I mean, it's sort of like trying to, you know, people who say, like, Black Lives Matter, and people like, well, all lives matter. I'm like, I know they do. But, like, black people have been subjected to systemic racism, police brutality. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard. To me, it's so obvious. I don't know how to explain it. Like,
yeah, it's a difficult situation because I agree with you. I think that, you know, stemming off of slavery, and there has been systematic racism and discrimination, you
right.
know, across this country. Like,
right.
in the South, we make jokes about it, but it's the same thing in the North, right?
Yes.
It's all over the country.
Yes.
And we all have to be cognizant of that. We all have to be aware of that. And we have to set up systems. But once you try to legislate morality, right, you open up a can of worms. Do you know what I mean? Like, so, and also you don't want to, you know, constantly remind people that they're victims and that they need help, right? So it's how do we set up systems where we help people to pull them out of poverty and empower them, but not at the same time, you know, you constantly tell someone a victim, they're going to think that they're lesser than themselves when in fact they're not. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but I would also say this: the movement was started by African Americans. I mean, it wasn't started as a pity party by whites. I mean, I would say this, like, I don't think legislating morality really applies in the sense, like, you go all the way back to the Rodney King beatings. I mean, you saw 4 to 6 white police officers beating a man who was clearly defenseless, and we were told as a society that was okay, that was fine. They were let off, no problem. You know, the guy was shot. I mean, how many African Americans have been shot and killed, and nothing really happens? It's like, that's fine. Well, that's something I think that can be directly addressed. And that's what I mean. That's when we talk about Black Lives Matter. Like, that doesn't happen to white people. That's not going to happen to me, you know? So...
Oh, no, no. It's the same ilk as, you know, it's like when I leave the house, right? I'm not in fear of being raped. I'm just not. It's not in my... I mean, now, if I was in, like, a high-security prison, I would be deathly afraid of being raped. It's the same thing with a woman. Like, oh, she can go out. She could be raped. It's just not within my realm of experience. It's the same thing, like, when I'm driving and I get pulled over by a cop, the worst thing that's going to happen to me is I'm going to get a ticket as a white male. There's no way they're going to pull me out of the car and beat me. And if they did, I'd have my freaking team of lawyers. I would own that town. Right. I would literally own that police department. Yeah. There would be a $150 million lawsuit. I know it's not going to happen to me. And for especially a male African-American, that's in the realm of possibility. Even if they're doing nothing, if they're just driving the car and they get pulled over, we saw it at Fordham University. Like, we would have, you know, our friends would come in, African American, and the guards would ask them for like 50 forms of ID, and we would show nothing because we were white, and they would just walk in.
Right. Yeah. So,
but you know. but my point is to, not that, you know, it should come from the African American community is to empower people. And I'm not making light of their plight, but like, what are and you do see, like, you know, Jay-Z, you see people coming into the community and giving back and showing like role models. But it's a form of empowerment. But in terms of like the Rodney King beatings, obviously there are bad cops, right? There are bad cops, but they're not, all the cops are not bad, right? So it's like, now I think a lot of police officers are wearing body cameras so that they know exactly what happened and they can review it and all that stuff. But there are bad apples, but they're not all bad apples.
No. Certainly not. And, you know, I have a good friend who lives, I don't know, a 5-minute walk away. He's a police officer. He's a very good man. And, I mean, there's you know, bad teachers. There's obviously, you know, there's bad priests. There's bad stockbrokers. There's, you know, dishonest people, people who are not interested in doing their job particularly well. And then some people are just vicious brutes. But I think, you know, with the Rodney King thing, it was like, okay, we have maybe these 4 bad police officers, but then we as a judicial system are saying this is fine. You can beat a man into the hospital and there will be no repercussions. And it's,
yeah, and if that was a white guy, that was a white guy, that would have never happened.
No, that would have never happened.
There would be lawyers out. Again, they would have owned the LA Police Department. They would have owned them.
Right. So, you know, you kind of, and again, to kind of bring us back to the legacy thing and the Felicity Huffman, like, these things are systemic. I mean, it's like, I don't really know what you do. No, you're right. I mean, about legislating morality, like, can you legislate people to not be racist? No, I mean, that usually has the opposite.
It's impossible.
Effect.
Like, I'm not racist, but then you're automatically going to assume I'm racist.
Yes.
But
I'm probably the least racist person. I don't even see color. I don't even see color.
Yeah,
I
don't see color. I don't see color. None of it. Zero. But you can't. It's, again, it's like legislating that. But then at the same time, it's like you can't. That's, you know, the counter argument was like, oh, well, you can't legislate, you know, not to kill people. Well, yeah, you can. You can make laws that if you kill somebody, you're going to go to jail. There's going to be repercussions. So there should be legislative and laws. There should be repercussions for doing stuff. And we do have laws. We have, you know, laws that, you know, you can't be racist. If it's racial motivated, it knocks up the charges. Mm-hmm. But it's more, you know, like educating, like we as a nation should never forget that there was slavery 400 years ago. And 400 years ago is like a blink of an eye. Like,
yes.
The forefathers, the people who founded this nation, owned slaves. Like, we should, just like we should never forget the Holocaust. We have to understand that that was part of our collective human experience. And at one point in time, we thought of it as normal and morally just. We can never forget that.
Well, and I think you can't, you know, legislate morality, obviously, and it's hard to legislate racism out of society, but you can, you know, force, like, the University of Alabama to accept African-American students, you know, and say, well, no.
Absolutely. Can't just say, and if they don't, you bring out the National Guard.
Yes.
You know, you hold it to them.
The reason I thought of that, I was watching David Axelrod last night, and he had Eric Holder on. And Eric Holder's sister-in-law was that woman on the video in 1963 who's being escorted into the University of Alabama.
Oh, really?
And his boss, initially at the Department of Justice, I think this was the connection, was the guy, I can't remember his name, but he was the guy escorting her in. And Eric Holder was like, see, that's the power of the federal government. Like, that's what it should be used for, to make real changes like that. Like, to say, you know, to the governor of Alabama, you're wrong, and these kids have every right to go to this school like all these other white kids, and there you go. Now, can all those ugly people standing outside using the N-word, can you legislate them to not be racist? No. But certainly it's a step. You know what I mean? Like, we're not... The University of Alabama has many African-American students, and that comes from the National Guard being there and forcing the issue.
And what's the insanity behind this is we're all, our ancestors, the beginning of humankind is in Africa, where we were all, that's where we started. And then the human race migrated, and they went to northern climates where it was cloudy, it wasn't a lot of sun. So over time, evolution, that your skin pigmentation became lighter so you could absorb the vitamin D. That's why people in Ireland and Norway, the Vikings, they're white as snow because they're trying to absorb vitamin D. So we're essentially all started from the same, you know, the same ilk. So this is ridiculous. It's skin pigmentation.
I believe there's a school of thought among the 5% nation, which is kind of the sort of very hardcore offshoot of the Nation of Islam. I can't remember the whole thing, but white people were created by some evil wizard and were unleashed as a plague upon the rest of the world, which is naturally brown and black. That makes more sense to me. That one, I could see that one.
we're a plague
on the earth. I mean, you know, wherever white people go, we tend to ruin everything. So look, it kind of holds true.
It's true. Look, I know complete idiots and assholes who are white, who are black, who are brown. There is no...
All walks of life.
It's literally all walks of life.
Yeah. Well, we got a little off topic with the legacy thing, but you know what? That's all right. We hit upon an important topic here.
Hey, listen, that's another good T-shirt. Off topic.
Off topic.
That should be our catchphrase for the working experience.
Absolutely. Well, folks, thank you very much for tuning in to this episode. And hope we really enlightened you on matters of race relations and affirmative action.
I hope we've summed it all up, so now there's no longer any racism. And the debate is over, I think. Right, Matt?
Well, after this episode, sure. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
There were probably a lot of people listening who were racist at the beginning of the podcast, and now they're not. Right?
Yes. I would say 100%.
Just, we're hitting it on all fronts, economically, socially, race relations, gender studies. We just,
making the world a better place.
Kind of amazing. Not to pat myself on the back, but kind of amazing, I would
say. Well, I'll pat you on the back, and you can pat me on the back.
And also, folks, we would like to make some money out of this, so subscribe, buy a t-shirt. I mean, for crying out loud, buy a t-shirt.
T-shirt's good. If you could buy a t-shirt, it would be great.
You know, or get on Patreon. We'll send you some little video. Maybe we'll have you on the pod. I mean, who wouldn't want to be on this podcast, right?
We're like, Matt and I are like circus monkeys. We'll literally do anything you want if you drop some coins into our box.
You know, it's almost like on Patreon when we invite people to be a guest on the podcast, that's almost a threat. It's not really an incentive, is it? It's almost a threat.
Oh, good stuff.
I can't believe I haven't brought this up before, but probably the best review we've gotten so far has been from John's wife, who finally, after, 200 episodes, listened to one of our podcasts?
Correct.
And said that you sounded like an idiot, and she never would have married you had... You've been doing this before. Is that about right? Is that what she said?
That was her raving review.
That's the best review we've gotten so far. Now, me, I think she said articulate, enticing, really on topic. That's pretty much what she said, right? Something like
that. I think it's a good sum up.
Yeah, pretty good on pretty much on target. So thanks for listening, everybody, and rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. You know what to do.
And if there's one takeaway from this podcast, if your loved ones shit all over you and tell you to quit, keep pushing on.
That's right. In the face of all logic, reason, tears, threats of divorce, just keep pushing on.
Push forward.
Push forward. That's right. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Working Experience. We'd like to thank our sponsors, One Circle Media and the Still Believe app. The only app that delivers video proof of the Tooth Fairy and Santa by simply taking a picture. Download the app at stillbelieve.co today and amaze your kids. And if you work for a studio, network, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain your audience, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I would love to hear from you. And that's it. The end. The sweet end. Until our next audio encounter.